I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Someone shot a teenage boy in East Baltimore Monday night about 8:30. City homicide detectives are investigating the shooting, one of two that occurred within 15 minutes of each other, and coming just a few hours after Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake delivered a State of the City address that focused on stemming a recent rise in homicides. One of the mayor's initiatives is aimed at getting young people off the city streets at night. We'll hear about the mayor's plans for curfew centers when she visits for the first hour of today's show. What is the mayor's full plan for reducing violence, and is it enough? My questions and yours from Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake of Baltimore after the news from NPR. Good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks with you on WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick and Hagerstown, WYPO Ocean City, and the Eastern Shore, and streaming live online through WYPR.org. We thank you for making Midday part of your day. Yesterday, Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake gave her annual State of the City address. In that speech, she spent a lot of time talking about what's been on the mind of many city residents. Homicides are up significantly this year compared with last year, and a recent spate of high-profile violent crimes has reignited concern about public safety in the city. To address the crime problem, the mayor laid out in her speech several ideas that she's here with us to talk about today. Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, we welcome you back to Midday. Thanks for making time for us.
Thank you for the invitation. It's always good to see you.
I'm curious, where are you just coming from? I know you had a meeting with the commissioner in a city neighborhood.
Yep, I was over in the Chum. With some of the community leaders and many of the officers that patrol that area, talking about and highlighting the enhancement or the expansion of our zone enforcement initiative. We expanded in January from 4 zones citywide to 17 zones citywide, and it is an effort to use what we know works and increase those initiatives that we know have shown positive results to continue to work to bring down the violent crime and homicides in the city.
So you were there. That's not far from our studios here.
It was very close.
28th Street.
Mm-hmm.
Lay out for our listeners, would you, for those who didn't get a chance to hear your speech yesterday, the key points you raised when it comes to a crime strategy in Baltimore?
Well, we know how we were able to reduce crime before. We've had our strategy evaluated by public safety, criminal justice experts, and confirmed that our strategy of focusing on the violent repeat offenders works. Then the issue is, how do we enhance that to get the best results for the city? And that's what we've been doing. The violent repeat offenders I talked about yesterday, every officer has been assigned violent repeat offenders to make sure that if they're going to bail review, we're working with the state's attorney's office to make sure that they are held and prosecuted accordingly. We're also bringing Operation Ceasefire, which has shown success in many cities across the country, into Baltimore again. When it first started back and when it was just getting started as an initiative, they tried it in Baltimore. And I don't think Baltimore was ready at that point. I mean, it takes a lot of coordination, a lot of stakeholder investment.
A commitment. Let's talk to our listeners a little bit about what that entails.
Yeah, so it is a way to target violent offenders that works directly with the community, directly with our federal, state, local law enforcement partners. Deep intelligence, we identify groups of individuals who that commit violence. So these groups of criminal offenders, and we call them in, and we say that if you are interested in turning your life around, we're interested in helping you. We have resources right here. We have support right here. We want to see you be better. But if you are insistent that you will continue the violence, we're going to take you down and the rest of your crew.
These are the consequences.
Right.
And I remember attending a meeting like this at the Western District Police district not that long ago, within the last 5 or 6 years, I would guess. So we've tried some of this in the past.
The way ceasefire works isn't by doing parts of it. It's by doing the whole thing. And we have tried doing parts, and several other cities have tried doing parts, and you don't see the success. You have to have all of the stakeholders on board. I just left an event at the Science Center with the DEA, and the DEA administrator said, you know, I know that you're bringing ceasefire to Baltimore. We're on board. How can we help? You know, it takes partnerships, not just with the state's attorney, but also with the federal prosecutors. And we're working very hard to make sure that that's a strong partnership as well. I've already increased funding to get more federal prosecutors to focus on violent repeat offenders in Baltimore. And for me, this is an enhancement of that partnership that I have with the U.S. attorney.
When these meetings are called, repeat offenders or those who are on parole, probation, out in the community, they're brought into maybe the police district or someplace else for these meetings. Does it involve only law enforcement, or are others involved in those meetings under ceasefire?
Yeah, it involves community members, because I think part of this is making it clear to those offenders that the community demands more, feels that they deserve better. And while I think many people, even in communities that might feel under siege from the violence, they hate the violence. They don't hate the people. They want better for these mostly young men who need to turn their life around. They want better, but they can't do it for them. And the message from the community members is, again, we, you know, like I said, we'll have resources there, support, whether it's, you know, with it, addiction, job counseling, all of those things. We will have support for you if you want to change your life around. But if you don't, we can't turn a blind eye, and we want you off the streets.
So bringing in Operation Ceasefire to Baltimore, one piece of this. Mm-hmm. You talked about curfews, enforcing curfews and having more curfew centers.
Mm-hmm. You know, so we know when young people are out after the curfew, they can become either victims or perpetrators of stuff that we don't want them doing out on the street.
We had one last night in the East Baltimore. Mm-hmm. I noticed a 17 or 18-year-old boy shot at 8:30 p.m. That's a little early for a curfew, but nonetheless.
Nonetheless, but so that issue speaks to a child in need, right? So what we do is with the curfew center during the summer is that helps us identify kids who are falling through the cracks. This work of reducing violent crime in the city, it's a short game. And then there's also the long game. And the short game is the work that we're doing, with the violent repeat offenders. But the long view has to look on how can we stop the pipeline of these young people that are turning into serial offenders. And the curfews, the connection center, the youth connection centers will do that year round.
Let's talk about that. I'm not sure everyone's familiar with the curfew center, that one actually exists on Barclay now. Mm-hmm. Now, right. So what is it like? This is where police would bring a child who's violating curfew?
Right. So during the summer, we have a curfew center that is manned by police officers, Department of Social Services, Department of Juvenile Justice. Did I say the school system?
No.
Mm-hmm. And it is a safe place for the kids to get dropped off until either their parent or guardian comes to get them, and they are evaluated. And DGS and DSS is there to see if these kids are being supervised under, you know, a court order, or if they need the help and supervision that DSS can give. And for me, it's about helping to identify kids who would otherwise fall through the cracks and answer the call that them being out there is sending. Right. So when you have a kid that's out on the street, and it broke my heart, I would see, you know, 5, 6, 7-year-old kids coming in after 1 o'clock in the morning. They were just hanging out on the street. And that is a call for help, a cry for help. And the connection centers answers that call.
So you would have more centers like this?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
24/7.
No, after curfew.
After curfew, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry, I referenced 24-hour centers, but this would be for violations of curfew.
Right.
Year-round, not just in the summer.
It should say year-round, not...
Not 24 hours.
I don't...
You only need them when there's...
Right, after
the
curfew.
Okay,
yes.
I get that.
Yes, yes.
All right,
yes.
Another piece of this would be increasing rewards for information leading to arrests?
So one thing we know is that we, in order for us to be a dramatically safer city, we have to have better connections and better relationships with the communities that are impacted by violence. And even when we were able to reduce violence to the lowest level since 77 under my administration a few years ago, I still, when I went into communities, you would think that they would say, you know, thank you, you know, we're getting violence down. I heard some of that, but I also heard, we're not your enemy. We want to be partners. We want to know we can send our kid down to the store and somebody's not going to jump out at him. You know, a police officer is going to jump out and scare the heck out of him. That we want to be treated with the same respect that you would treat your family. And I knew, and I know in my heart, that we can't expect these same communities to want to be a help to the to us as we try to reduce violence, to be partners if they feel that we're, that the police are making them feel like, you know, like strangers or unwanted in their own neighborhood, that we had to repair those relationships. And, you know, while we did, we had a lot of challenges last year, I can say that the number of discourtesy calls has gone down for the police department. The discourtesy, the
complaints about the
abuse, mm-hmm. all of those treatments mm-hmm. have, that has gone down. And you know what's gone up? The number of calls from our residents, 300% increase in community engagement, number of calls that are coming in with information. And in order to supplement that and to create some more incentive and some more movement in that area, I am increasing funding to Metro Crime Stoppers. And if you help us get guns off the streets, there'll be $500 and $1,000 rewards if that leads to an active gun arrest.
And seizure of illegal guns.
Yeah.
Have you asked the private sector to help you fund that?
You know, the private sector helps already fund Metro Crime Stoppers, and we look for partnerships all the time with the private sector. On this one, this was me saying that I want to invest in increasing the incentive for the public to work with us in partnership.
The overall picture of crime in Baltimore, let's talk about this in your discussions with Police Commissioner Batts, who will be on our show tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
January got off to a very bloody start.
It did.
A lot of homicides in January, an increase of 80% over last year. However, we keep being told that violent crime is down generally mm-hmm. across the city by 29%. So when you ask the police commissioner what's going on, which is the question on everybody's mind, and especially last month in January. Mm-hmm. Things have been relatively quiet so far in February, but when you ask him what's going on, does he have an answer for that?
You know, the there are lots of answers. You know, behind the numbers last year, we had, unfortunately, some spikes in infanticide, some spikes in domestic, and that's why it's so important that the work that we did in Annapolis to shift the protective order to the sheriff's department, which will allow them to be more effective and quicker in the service of these warrants and help to protect women. You know, even this year, some of those incidents were domestic related. So, you know, there's a lot of information under the numbers, and to say, do you know what happened? Yes, we have the commissioner announced yesterday that with the cases that we had in January, either between 60% and 70% of them have persons of interest. So we know what's going on, and we're going after those individuals. But that doesn't answer the whole story. You know,
spike in January, in a very cold January.
Freezing cold.
Yeah, I mean,
like in here.
So what I mean, I know it's the answer may not, it's very, the studio's kind of chilly.
Yes.
The answer is out there somewhere, but so what does the commissioner say?
Well, what we can say is since we expanded that, the zone enforcement, and it's been in place for the last few weeks, we've seen a reduction in homicides and a further reduction in violent crime. And that's why I'm so optimistic about the other initiatives that we're bringing on. I talked about a few of the initiatives that we're bringing on, but there's a lot more to come. And I am very interested in getting more people engaged in the work around trying to make Baltimore a safer city.
And one thing I'll note, Mark Reuter of the Baltimore Brew did some analysis of the crime figures from January and reports in the Brew that 1 in 5 violent crimes reported last month were in the southeastern police district. Overall, the city had a violent crime down generally across the city, but you had a spike in one particular district. Residential robbery up, street robbery up, overall robbery up, aggravated assault up, larceny from autos up, and of course you had homicides in other districts. But that explains, you know, sometimes you get so much public reaction to a particular crime spree concentrated in one area. There's no wonder, understandably,
and the commissioner has taken the leadership in that district to task and will continue to look for better results. You know,
one last question before our first break here. When it All comes right. to crime, we had a transition from Commissioner Bielefeld to Commissioner Batts in 2012, I think it was. Yeah, August or September 2012. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that this commissioner is doing differently than the previous commissioner? Is significantly different in its approach that may explain why we've seen a rise in homicides and shootings since the summer?
I think Commissioner Batts did what other cities have done across the country, where they've seen the specialized, a lot of complaints around the specialized units, and how they interact with the community. Yes, those specialized units were very successful in suppressing violent crime and homicides, but at what expense? And the expense in far too many cities when they had those units was the increase in abuse, some in-custody deaths, and some things that you had to say, on balance, is this what we want for our community? So just like with Chicago that dismantled their specialized units, we dismantled theirs. They saw a spike. We saw a spike. But you got to get back to that balance where we are working in partnership with our communities. Again, we have to be tough on crime, but not at the expense of our neighbors. And that's, I think, what many cities felt with those types of units.
410-662-8780 is the phone number for Midday. If you have a question for Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, our guest in this hour of the show, you can ask about the crime strategy that she laid out in her State of the City speech yesterday, or about anything else that's on your mind as a city resident. 410-662-8780, our Midday email address. You can address a question that way as well. Midday@wypr.org. Welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. 410-662-8780 is our phone number for Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake. If you have a question for the mayor while she's with us in this hour of the show, it's hard to talk about anything else other than crime when we have a period of like we had in January, especially, and going into the end of the year with homicides going up again. So back to my last question about the change in command at the police department, Bielefeld to Batts. Just one last thing. You know, whenever you spoke with Commissioner Bielefeld, it was always targeted enforcement, bad guys with guns. Now, we don't hear that phrase anymore because Fred Bielefeld's gone. Commissioner Batts is his own man. He's a new man. But what about that? That seemed to be an effective strategy because while Bielefeld was saying bad guys with guns, let's focus on that, we saw a decrease in homicides.
Well, I mean, if you'd like me to call it bad guys with guns, I can. I mean,
is it the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we've been talking about. These are the violent repeat offenders. These are the ones that.
So the emphasis is the same. The slogan isn't there.
No, but if it helps you, I'll say bad
guys.
No, listen,
you don't have to help me.
I'm just trying.
I'm just trying for the citizens. I want to know, is the strategy, has it been consistent through that time?
Of course it has. And that's what, when I started off talking about, we know what works, and that's targeting violent repeat offenders, and that's the strategy that we continue to use. When Commissioner Batts came on board, he had he worked with some experts to evaluate that strategy to see what tweaks needed to be done to keep pace with the change in crime. You know, crime isn't stagnant, and criminals are always trying to stay one step ahead. And that's how we developed. He developed the Baltimore Police Strategic Plan, and which confirmed that that focus on violent repeat offenders is the right focus. So that focus on bad guys with guns is the right thing to do.
So with that strategic plan in place that we heard about last year, bringing in ceasefire fits with that.
Oh, of course. It's doubling down on that that strategy. It is, you know, putting more teeth behind that strategy in a way that has shown success in many other cities. And like I said before, when I was this morning at the event with the DEA administrator, she was very pleased because she's seen success and is looking for ways to work with us because she knows that that has been successful in reducing homicide.
Let's take some phone calls and questions for Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake during this hour of midday. Anne is in Northeast Baltimore. We'll start with you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you, Dan. A few months ago, after my home was burglarized during the day by young people and trying to follow up with it, with the police and the detectives, with information that I had about the burglary, I was told numerous times by the police officers that my district, Northeast District, just can't deal with all the property crime, which is what it was called, even though at the time I came home in the middle of the robbery, there were children in my house and I had my own kids around me, so it could have been very violent. And in fact, we know that those two young men who were accused of killing that woman did so in the context of a burglary. I'm upset because of the fact that I keep being told that violent crimes are so important that the police can't deal with these other less important crimes. But what I see as a mother and a teacher is children during the school day disenfranchised and unsupervised and doing these things like home robberies for fun. And in fact, anecdotally, I know many people who are burglarized by young people. And those things will inevitably end in violence at some point or another, or lead to more violence, either against those young people or the young people against the other citizens. And so as a mom and a teacher, I just really have a problem with it being treated like it's not that big a deal or it's equivalent to vandalizing or something like that called property crime when, as I see it, it's the mark of the disenfranchisement of youth in our city, and I don't see it getting any better.
Thank you, Anne.
So thank you for the call, and I'm certainly very sorry to hear about the burglary of your home. I know how unsettling that is to have your home violated in that way. Couple of things. Yes, we have a focus on violent crime, but it should not be at the expense of property crime or the burglaries that we have seen can turn into violent crime. So we have a couple of issues. One with respect to the young people. You know, we work very hard to put officers on the street at the right time to be able to get, to catch and, to be there to catch these perpetrators. And, particularly when it's young people in school time to figure out what they're doing on the street. But, that we're not going to be everywhere. And some of these same kids are the ones that we're going to, find help for with the curfew centers, because these are the same, the ones that are hanging out during the day are the same ones hanging out during the night. And when we can get them connected to the right services, I think we will do better. So with respect to the Northeast, though, Northeast is an example of why the strategic plan was so important. You know, when you take a look at the geographic area of the Northeast, it shows you that, we have to do a better job updating the sector lines and figure out a better way to do deployment so we can address the types of crime that happened when it happens. So in Northeast, in some pockets of Northeast, you have the violent crime at night and property crime during the day. You have to deal with those differently, and you have to be able to be more nimble and responsive. And right now, contractually, the police commissioner's hands are tied, in a sense, with the way he can deploy. That's why this new police contract is so important, and we're working very hard with the union to make sure that we get a new contract that will allow the police commissioner to deploy in a way that can be more nimble and more responsive, hopefully move us towards also one of the things that the strategic plan laid out was redrawing the districts so we can better deploy our officers.
Mayor, when you hear the phrase curfew center, I mean, I can't help but think of rec center.
Mm-hmm.
And people may be wondering, in terms of how you reconfigured, shut down, opened up new, built new rec centers, what is the lay of the land in Baltimore City? If we're talking about young people during the day, especially after school and on the weekends.
Yeah, after, you know how critically important that after school time is.
So where'd we end up with rec centers in Baltimore?
Well, let me talk about after school and then I'll talk about rec centers, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So year over year, we've increased funding for after school programs, as well as increased accountability in the sense that we want to fund programs that we know are working and that have, you know, data that supports the positive outcome for young people. And I will continue to work to increase funding for after school opportunities. And I want to thank the many partners that we have that are running these great programs and advocating on behalf of our young people. With respect to rec centers, I made the commitment during my first budget as mayor that I wasn't going to do things the same way just for the heck of it. That I think it was disingenuous to communities to call these some of these buildings rec centers, because we weren't providing services. They were in deplorable condition. You wouldn't send your enemy there. So yes, it was open, but to what point? And so when I hear people talk about, oh, you're closing rec centers, I'm thinking to myself, did you ever walk in and see what we had there? You know, when I asked community stakeholders to take a look at every single rec center in our city. And I said, look, this is what we have. Take a look at what's best practices out there. They went outside of Baltimore City, and I think they even went into D.C. to see, you know, what's possible when it comes to recreation centers. And they were very, very clear. They said, we want quality over quantity. We want assets, community assets that people will use. We want larger centers. We want state-of-the-art centers. We want longer hours. We want more staff and better programming. Well, you can't spend that same dollar twice. I'm not going to be able to keep an old, underutilized, unsafe building open for the sake of being able to say I kept a rec center open and at the same time invest in what the community wants. I said, I'll make that tough decision. I will identify the ones that are underutilized, the ones that are in poor condition and that aren't serving our kids, so we can build for better. And that's what we've been doing. We've already we've broken ground on centers, cut ribbons, and opened centers with more to come. And they the ones that we've opened and the ones that we will open are the ones that communities say they want. State-of-the-art, better programming, better, more staff, longer hours, and something that you actually want to bring your children to, bring your seniors to, not a place of last resort.
Thank you, Mayor. Another call. This is Jay in Baltimore. Thank you for calling Midday.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you for taking my call, Mr. Roderick. Hello, Mayor. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I've got a question. I have a question and a thought. The question is, are there any statistics as to whether or not the crimes committed by youth or very young people, are they by native Baltimoreans, or these people that have come into the city at a later age? And the reason why I ask the question, and it's kind of piggybacking on what you just said about the rec centers, just a thought about the possibility that maybe the city could rent out some buildings in good shape for a dollar a year to some of the community groups who are willing to just really come in there just for the love of the youth and the love of the city to run some programming.
Jay, excuse me for interrupting. I thought your question was going to be about repeat offenders. Did you have a question for the mayor about repeat offenders?
But I can talk to that if you don't mind.
About vacant buildings?
Well, it's not vacant buildings. The notion that we can use our buildings in a different way to serve our community is what...
I'll let him finish his question.
It's what I based...
I thought he was calling about repeat offenders.
Yeah, but it was what I used when we started having the conversations about which buildings to close, which ones need to stay open. That is how I came up with the idea of the charter centers. So we have allowed community groups and not-for-profits to partner with us to keep some of the rec centers open. We even reopened a center in West Baltimore that had been closed for more than 3 years with a partnership an organization came to us as an organization that wanted to serve in a distressed community, and we reopened the rec center that had been closed under previous administration.
Jay, is that what you were asking about?
Well, that was it, and also the first part I think is important. Are a lot of these repeat offenders, were they born in Baltimore, or did they come from somewhere else?
Yeah, I wish I had that information. I don't have it off the top of my head.
Mark in Baltimore, will go to you next. Thanks for your call.
Hi, Dan, Mrs. Mayor, thank you for this conversation. And I just wanted to say I really think your strategy on the rec centers has been very smart, so I appreciate your leadership there, following the last question. But my question, last fall I had the opportunity to do a ride-along with one of the officers, police officers in the Northern District, and he was young and he was very impressive, very polite, but he also had a laptop in his car that didn't work, and he had a brand-new BlackBerry that didn't work. And as a result, we spent like half of the shift kind of wasting time. And mm-hmm. It seemed like the support wasn't there to let the officers on the beat do the work they need to do. And I'm just wondering how we can work more effectively and improve accountability.
You are absolutely right. We are not keeping pace with the technology upgrades that we need to. And we are trying to make smart investments to improve technology for our officers. In a time where the city was facing significant budget shortfalls, my commitment to the city was that I would not lay off one single officer, one single police officer, or one single firefighter. But we still had a budget deficit of over $120 million. And some things, it's just like you have deferred maintenance with buildings when you have hard times. You know, some things took a hit, and technology is one of them. And that's why, you know, as we are growing out of this this recession, I'm working to improve the technology, and give the officers the support that they need. Additionally, one of the things that I talked about yesterday in my State of the City is the upgrade that we're making to allow officers to submit their reports from the street, to save them from what you experienced when you did the ride along, where it was a lot of inefficient use of time. As I said, they are having to go to their desk to fill out archaic forms. We're working on technology upgrades that would let them do it, you know, right where they are, save time, and keep them out in the community where our residents want to see them.
Mayor, I have a couple of questions related to crime by email from mm-hmm. one of our listeners. Are city budget issues causing reductions in the police force? And if so, can you implement a new strategy with that constraint?
So as I said before, even in our toughest year, my commitment was not to lay off one officer, not to lay off one firefighter. Counterintuitively to many, in our toughest years, I said I would continue to aggressively hire. We have to do better with keeping pace with attrition, but it's not a budget constraint.
It's a matter of hiring, recruiting.
It is recruiting, right? As well as trying to people want our officers. And we have the best training, and we get poached all the time. Every time we do a police contract and they last for years, we have to figure out in that moment, how can we best protect the department from being poached? How can we get more competitive salaries, and how can we make it more costly to the cities that are, the jurisdictions, not cities, but counties and things that are organizations that are trying to poach our offices? How do we kind of level the playing field? So that's one of the things that we're looking at in this, as we negotiate this new contract. How can we pay our officers more? And deal with the disparity in the level. It's like 3 to 5 years in, it gets to be a growing disparity between our salaries and several other jurisdictions, and that's when we tend to lose people.
The other question was, I'm observing repeatedly that the police enforcement increases in an area after crime sprees happen. What can we do to have sufficient police force to be present to prevent surges in crime?
So when we talked at the show's opening about the expansion of zone enforcement, it was just for that purpose. In the zone enforcement, it is a proactive strategy. In the zones, the officers are very aware of where every single violent repeat offender lives, where they congregate. We are doing drug buys. We're doing stings. And we are, being on them, like people say, like white on rice, mm-hmm. to work to suppress violence in those groups that we know are either they're either going to be perpetrators or they're going to become victims. And as I said, with the expansion of those zones from 4 to 17 over the past few, it's been in place for the past few weeks, we have seen a difference. And I think we're going to see even more once we start implementing some of the other initiatives that I talked about.
Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, our guest on Midday in this hour, 410-662-8780. A short break. We'll come back and take some more calls. This is a good time to give us a ring if you have a question for the mayor. Back with Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, who yesterday gave her State of the City address, with us today at midday for a few more minutes. Casey in Baltimore, we'll go to you for your question for the mayor. Hi.
Hi, how are you today? How are you, Mayor?
Good, thank you.
All right, good. I've been extremely critical of the mayor over the last few years, but, I think that crime has gotten to such a point that, I think that we need to start coming together and finding critical ways on dealing with the crime inside of the community, with some of the community business owners and things of that nature. And I'd really like to reach out to somebody from your, I'd like a number to reach out to someone from your administration, because I have a very detailed plan that I've been researching over the last year or so that I think would help on a number of levels. I think it would help with blighted properties. I think it would help with increasing the tax base. I think it would help with putting more officers on the street.
Casey, why don't you just briefly tell us what it is and then ask a question?
All right. Well, the question, I already got to the question part, but I think if we get more officers moving back into our communities, and there used to be a program with your teacher next door and your officers next door that we can start implementing, but partnering that along with other things that you've already put in place, like you have a microloan program. The microloan program can now be extended, to helping to purchase homes so we can start getting more money moving from the banks with the microloan program to assisting some of these officers on moving back from York, Pennsylvania and other areas and putting them on some of these blocks and getting some of these blighted houses off. But there's also another piece that I've attached to.
Okay, let's address just that for the time being, and we have other folks who want to ask questions of the mayor. So let's just take that piece of it. Officer next door. Yeah.
Well, I thought his voice sounded familiar. And for someone who, gotta love Casey, who has been so critical for so long, at least I would have thought he would have done a little bit of research on some of the stuff I've done. We've invested more than $12 million in exactly what he's talking about, creating the housing incentive program. Focused, and we give extra incentives for city employees. So if you're a police officer, teacher, firefighter, you get an extra bonus, an extra incentive to move into the city. We've been able to move many people into houses through our Vacants to Value initiative, and the housing incentive that he talked about was something that we put in place a few years ago, and it's seen a lot of success.
What is the progress in Vacants to Value? Today, it's February 2014. It got pretty aggressive there last year. How's it going?
We've been very aggressive, and we have received international recognition as an innovative program to deal with urban blight. We have torn down 800 vacant homes. We've spurred millions of dollars in private investment. We've done over 1,000 court cases to get the properties out of the hands of the absentee landlords that aren't doing anything with them into the hands of responsible owners. One of the things that I'm proud about. I talk about a lot, you know, trying to bring 10,000 families to Baltimore. And part of that strategy, yes, it's bringing new people in, but it's also a retention strategy. How do we keep people who want to grow in Baltimore? And with that, those incentives programs that I talked about with the housing and home ownership incentives, 30% of those were people who were new to Baltimore City and used those incentives. 70% were current residents that we created the financial incentive, the push, so they could grow in Baltimore, furthering to helping to stabilize some of our communities and to promote growth. And a significant number of that 70% were people who were able to buy their first home with that incentive. So I think this is one time, I think, in my 4 years as mayor that I agree with Casey that we should have that type of incentive program, and I have put that in place.
Mayor, the city council is calling for documents related to the speed camera operations in Baltimore in the last few years. The speed camera operations have been dormant since last April. Mm-hmm. So where are you on that? Are we going to see speed cameras operating again in Baltimore?
So first, to the documents, I've made it very clear that I want to work with the city council to get them the information that they need as they perform their investigation of the speed camera program. I'm confident that when they get the information that we saw, that they'll see like we did, that we made the right decisions when we had full information about cameras that weren't operating effectively. Those cameras were taken down, tickets were voided, and money was refunded if someone had already paid the ticket. And that was done on a consistent basis. And I'm very comfortable with the fact that once they see all of the information, they see it in context, that they will see that too. But
you
back to the program.
Excuse me, I just want to interrupt you. You said refunded. You know, I hadn't noticed in the press before, at least in my own newspaper, the Baltimore Sun, that money was actually refunded to people for bogus tickets, bad tickets. Did that actually happen?
In significant ways, yes.
Okay. Because I know the tickets were voided. I didn't realize that some people got their money back.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So please continue. So we're going to see.
That's not, sensational. It might be on in the last paragraph.
I just didn't. Yeah. I hadn't seen it until recently. Someone said that they had been refunds. I wasn't aware of it.
Yeah. Okay. So with respect to the program overall, you know, communities asked us for the program. They wanted to find ways to keep their kids safe and to promote safety as their young people were going to and from school. Everyone knows that there have been accidents. If you spend any time on the road, you know that too many people aren't paying attention to what they're doing, aren't paying attention to their speed. The sad part about it is since we took the cameras down in April, I have people come up to me and tell me that they're driving faster, that they know, and it's almost like a guilty admission that they know they're doing wrong now that the cameras aren't up. We need to do whatever we can to promote safety in and around schools so we can protect our kids. That's what the speed camera program was about. When it wasn't performing the way it should, I took the program down. My commitment is to get a program and to work with the proper vendor and technology to get it right, because for me, it's about safety. And you know, I got a question. You mentioned I was talking to C4 earlier. I got a question from him. He said, well, you know, it's a question of trust, and people have a question of whether or not they can trust the tickets. I said, so is the answer to that to do nothing? Like, how does that, how?
I don't know. You got to find a vendor whose cameras work.
Oh, of course.
We've been through two of them.
Right. But what I'm saying to you is, how does that improve trust by the commitment to do nothing? I will do nothing.
Well, I understand the question. It's a fair question. I've been through two vendors, and both of them failed. And
but his
why
suggestion was to give up on the speed camera program. And I said, how does that
Or
help?
Import the one that's used in Germany. Someone told me, a native of Germany told me they've got a great system over there. By the way, another question that follows up on the vacancies in the police department.
Uh-huh.
Is it how short are we in the police department?
We have to do a better job keeping up with attrition. The police commissioner has been pressing training to get larger classes so we can keep pace with attrition, because we haven't been able to.
How do you get
over
them?
The last year, aggressive outreach. One of our lieutenant colonels wants to reshape the way we do the Explorer program. So a lot of people feel that if we get more officers that are from Baltimore, more, you know, young people as they graduate to, that want to give back to the community, you know, just like we have, you know, people that serve through Teach for America, that we can find ways to create that excitement around, you know, getting, you know, smart young people to serve their community through work in the police department. And you have to be strategic and intentional about looking for local people. And that's what we are going to do broadly do outreach. But also, you know, how can we get more people who are from Baltimore, who love Baltimore, and who want the best for Baltimore to be a part of the department?
Susan is our next caller. You're on with Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake. Hi.
Hi. I had a question for the mayor, and I appreciate her leadership, and the problems and challenges that Baltimore faces are deep. But my question is, you know, we these are problems that we've been hearing about for decades, and we hear, you know, a lot of talk about the ways and the means, but at what point do we just start, you know, looking at what are the results? I mean, we're all driving around, we're all, you know, turning into neighborhoods we can't even drive through. And this has been going on for decades. And when are we just going to start using that as a way of finding if we're going better or going worse?
I don't understand the question.
What is the question, Susan?
My question is, you know, these problems are decades old. So, and they seem to be getting worse. So there's a lot of different ways we can address them, but we aren't seeing change in the ways that we need.
Okay. I mean, as far as history goes, you know, we had years with more than 300 homicides in Baltimore.
I lived through it.
And, you know, I mean, we're still not there. I'm not making any excuses for it. There's been another rise. Her question was, do you have confidence in Commissioner Batts? That's what I thought her question was.
And then my question to her and to others is, when we had 197 homicides, was that an acceptable level of violence? You know, what number is acceptable? Right. You know, is it 198 that I should fire the commissioner? 211? What number is acceptable? You know, for me, we continue to move on the positive path. We have overall violent crime reduction and clear strategies and initiatives that we know that will help us to reduce the number of homicides and do it in a way that promotes the type of relationships that we want to have with our community. If I feel that Commissioner Batts is unwilling to move forward in a way that gets us there, that's when you have a conversation about, you know, does he need to stay? But that whole notion that homicides have gone up, you know, that you should get rid of Batts. So was 197 acceptable?
Here's one last question here from email, Mayor. This is from Becky in Hamden, who's concerned about the roads in her neighborhood.
Yeah.
Because of water main breaks and repairs that are going on this winter. The roads are in poor shape. My partner has suffered a costly tire repair driving to work, and I worry about the wear and tear to our cars and our neighbors' cars. So when will these roads be repaired? She's not specific about which road.
No, I know what she's talking
about.
We know
the city's dealing with a lot of water main breaks this winter.
So, yes, generally a lot of water main breaks, and I know the problems that she speaks of in Hamden. I spend a decent amount of time over there. You know,
in Hamden?
Yeah, I like it over there. Close to where I live. Anyway, in Hamden in particular, they've had some significant water main breaks and issues, and it's not just in Hamden. Because of the water problems they've had in surrounding areas, that has impacted Hamden and having to have some pipes and things run above ground. And the worst part about it for the people in Hamden and other neighborhoods across the city where we're trying to do this work is the extreme cold temperatures don't make it any easier to do this work that needs to be done. So it's taken longer to do the repairs. And yes, the repairs are frustrating, but we have old infrastructure and, you know, the worst time of the year to try to fix it. But the work will continue. You know, I know she sees crews around. I see them there when I drive around Hamden. It's a lot of work that needs to be done. Can't be done overnight, but we are still working.
In January alone, the Public Works Department logged 353 water main breaks. That's the equivalent of what the department usually sees in a four-month period, according to your officials over in DPW. And a third of those are in Baltimore County because it's part of the city
mm-hmm.
system.
Yeah.
Mayor, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Police Commissioner Batts will be with us tomorrow, so we'll continue this conversation about public safety in Baltimore City. Mayor, thank you again.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to the first hour of Midday. We'll take a break for lunch, brought to us today by Bagby Pizza Company, located in Baltimore's historic Bagby Building over in Harbor East. Bagby Pizza Company serves up brick oven thin crust pizza, gourmet sandwiches, pastas, salads, and more. It's open daily 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. with nightly delivery 5 to 9 p.m. Please stay tuned for the news, then the second hour of our show.